I decided to take control of my life and start a diary to tell the truth about Bridget Jones. The whole truth. Resolution number one.
Ooh.
Obviously, we'll lose 20 pounds. Number two, always put last night's panties in the laundry basket. Equally important, we'll find nice, sensible boyfriend to go out with and not continue to form romantic attachments to any of the following. Alcoholics, workaholics, commitment phobics, peeping toms, megalomaniacs, or perverts. And especially will not fantasize about a particular person who embodies all these things.
Bridget Jones' Diary is a prime example of what's known as chick lit, those funny and somewhat racy stories devoured by legions of women. Jennifer Weiner is one of the star writers of chick lit. She's written three novels, Good in Bed, In Her Shoes, and Little Earthquakes. Each became a big bestseller and was then optioned by Hollywood. Now, what you may not realize about Jennifer Weiner is that she went to Princeton, where she studied creative writing with such luminaries as John McPhee, Toni Morrison, and Joyce Carol Oates. So Anne Strangehamps wanted to know what Jennifer makes of her less-than-literary reputation.
Does it bug you when you're talked about as a chick lit writer?
Well, here's the thing. On the one hand, on the other hand, because on the one hand, it is incredibly galling because I have this very fine education that my parents paid a lot of money for. You know, and I have books with sort of symbolism and allusion and literary references and wit. And I like to think that they're nicely written and that they're sort of, you know, interesting, chewy reads. But I remember when I wrote Good in Bed and I took the manuscript home and I gave it to my mother and I was so on pins and needles that she was going to be offended by some of it. And she's like, "Nah, I loved it. It was a real page turner." And I'm like, "A page turner? Like, what are you talking about, page turner? This is literature, Fran."
Well, I was writing fiction. Yeah, page turner is kind of a put down, isn't it?
It felt a little bit like a put down, but I've kind of made my peace with it. It's like I write entertainment with a capital E instead of literature with a capital L. And that's okay. You know, there's a place for everyone.
So for people who aren't even that familiar with the term or haven't figured out if they've read chick lit or not, what is chick lit?
Okay, if you've read a book with a pink cover and a purse or some high-heeled shoes on it, you might have read chick lit. And if there is a heroine in her 20s or early 30s and she's unhappy in her job and she can't find the right guy and she has this crazy dysfunctional family, or maybe it's a crazy dysfunctional workplace and sort of a loyal sidekick best friend and she gets a happy ending, you might have read chick lit.
So is this genre fiction, the new form of romance
novel? That's one reading of it, that this is sort of a postmodern version of the fairy tale romance, where instead of, you know, corsets and knights on white horses, it's girls with Starbucks cups navigating the perils of the office space.
And is it?
You know, it's very, very interesting. I tend to believe that chick lit is its very own thing, where there are elements of the genre romance, elements of the romantic comedy, but that there's also something kind of fresher and newer about it. The goal of romance, as far as I'm remembering my days of reading Harlequins, is, you know, to find the guy. Mm-hmm. And have a couple great sex scenes and live happily ever after. And I think that with chick lit, the goal is finding your place in the world. It's finding autonomy and where you belong and who you're going to be when you grow up. And if you get the guy as a part of that, that's a wonderful thing. But I mean, there's plenty of chick lit books that end with the heroine riding off into the sunset by herself. You know,
really?
With sort
there
of
are?
Yeah, there are, with a one way ticket to Thailand. No, they don't all end with the guy. A lot of them do, you know. But I think that that's sort of a convention since Jane Austen's time.
That suggests that there is a kind of hidden politics to them, personal politics to them, that these maybe are, you know, post-feminist books in which the happy ending may include a guy, may not.
Yeah, I think that that's true. But I think that, again, the guy isn't the ultimate goal. I think that in a lot of cases, certainly the subset of chick lit that's been called assistant lit, where you're talking about The Devil Wears Prada and The Nanny Diaries, where the happy ending is getting rid of that awful boss. You know, it's like maybe there's a guy, maybe there's not a guy, maybe there's a suggestion that there will be a guy, but it's sort of throwing off the shackles of oppression which is very different than anything you'd find in genre romance.
What about the setting? Because in genre romance, there are genre settings mm-hmm. also. You've got mm-hmm. your Western romances and your Regency romances.
Right.
And all in Chick Lit, you have
London and New York.
You've got Prada and Manolo Blahnik and shopping uh-huh. for handbags and Starbucks in New York City.
There are a lot of New York. There's a lot of London. There's a lot of Chick Lit heroines with jobs in publishing, because I think a lot of Chick Lit authors initially had jobs in publishing. I mean, that's one way I've sort of been able to distinguish my books, because they take place in Philadelphia, which is not New York. As the editor of The New Yorker pointed out to me very snottily when I tried to, like, I sent them a query about a story I wanted to do in Philadelphia, and they were like, well, geographically speaking, I never felt so low. It was like I lived in Jersey. It was just really very hard to take. But there's a lot of big cities, and I think that has to do with kind of an urban tribalism that goes on in Chick Lit, where you have your touchstones, you have your Starbucks, you have your, you know, shishi boutiques where the heroine buys her clothes, and you have a lot of men.
So what's with the covers? Why are they always pink?
Well, probably there's some marketing genius somewhere who's done like a whole bunch of research about, like, if it's pink, they will buy it.
Does this bother you? Because seriously, I'm probably somebody who might read Chick Lit and mm-hmm. hasn't read as much of it as mm-hmm. I might have, partly because I don't really want to be seen walking out of the bookstore with those covers.
Oh, well, you listen, you're looking at a woman who wrote a book called Good in Bed. I mean, how do you think I felt knowing that people were going to have to carry that around? I think that Chick Lit, in a way, is like comfort food, okay? Like, when you buy the Stouffer's frozen dinner with fried chicken and mashed potatoes, like, you want fried chicken and mashed potatoes. You don't want to open it up and find that you've gotten Salisbury steak by accident. And I think that those pink covers are a way of signifying, okay, smart, witty, frustrated, unhappy heroine who is going to get happy by the end of this book. You know, the Mr. Right, the Mr. Wrong, the crazy family, the urban setting, that the pink is a way of sort of signaling that's what you're going to get. And there's going to be some shopping, and hopefully there's going to be some funny stuff. And, you know.
Would you like to see this field, the Chick Lit field, change or move or develop in any way? I mean, if you were an editor looking for these sorts of books, what would you be looking for?
I would be looking for something that felt fresh and realistic and spoke to me as a reader. But I do think that the genre will evolve as the writers get older and have other stuff going on in their lives. I mean, like, my first two books, Good in Bed and In Her Shoes, were sort of the single girl books. And Little Earthquakes, it's the single girls get married and have babies. And what's that all about?
And I got married and had a baby.
I might be closing up shop. I'm not sure. But I think that there's a natural evolution that'll take place. And I think the other
interesting... I'm waiting for them to become 45 and write the middle-aged Chick Lit
books. Well, that's out there, too. It's called Henlit.
You're kidding.
I'm not, no.
Henlit. What's Henlit?
Well, it's when the chick gets older.
I think I need to find some. Who's writing Henlit?
Elizabeth Buchan wrote The Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, Lorna Landvik, Angry Housewives Eating Bonbons. A lot of anger, a lot of rage in those titles. It's kind of funny to me. But The Red Hat Club, you know, it's out there.
Is there a male version of this?
I mean,
why isn't there Dick Lit?
There is. It has been crashingly unsuccessful. There were a couple of books that came out last year. One was called Booty Nomad and one was called The Love Monkey, and they crashed and burned. Hmm. Nick Hornby can pull it off, the guy who wrote High Fidelity and mm-hmm. About a Boy. But, well, first of all, I think it's something like 80% of fiction is bought by women. So you're looking at a very small slice of the pie if you're aiming these books at men. And if you're trying to appeal to the Chick Lit audience and say, okay, here's what's really going on with these guys, here's how they think, here's what they're doing, you can read these books and come away kind of horrified. It's like, you know, I didn't know it was as bad as all that, you know. And it's a hard thing to pull off, and I'm not sure that there's the market for it, really. I mean, certainly the books that came out trying to do sort of the guy Chick Lit just didn't do well at all.
Jennifer, thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Jennifer Weiner talked with N. Strange Shemps. Jennifer's written three novels, Good in Bed, In Her Shoes, and Little Earthquakes.
Baby, I'm yours.